In a world where uncertainty reigns supreme, where shadows of chaos dance at every turn, one truth emerges unyielding. Preparation is not a luxury, but a lifeline. Behold the Wellness Company, a beacon of readiness amidst the tempestuous seas of fate. Envision a sanctuary of tranquility, where the tumult of unforeseen medical crises finds no purchase. The Wellness Company's Medical Emergency Kit stands as a bastion of assurance, a fortress of resilience against the unseen foes of health. Within its sacred confines lie the tools of salvation. Ivermectin, to ward off the insidious whispers of disease. Emergency antibiotics, to quell the raging storms of infection. Antivirals, to vanquish the relentless tides of contagion, and more. The Wellness Company Medical Emergency Kit is not merely a collection of supplies, it is the embodiment of preparedness itself. Crafted by the hands of esteemed healers led by luminaries such as Dr. Peter McCullough, Dr. James Thorpe, Dr. Harvey Risch, and Dr. Drew Pinsky, this kit stands as the pinnacle of safety, the zenith of prevention. These truth-seeking doctors have forged a testament to vigilance, a testament to the unwavering pursuit of well-being. Embrace the certainty that comes from being armed against adversity. Embrace the Wellness Company, for in its embrace lies the promise of resilience, the promise of a brighter tomorrow amidst the chaos of today. Don't wait for the next crisis to strike. Visit twc.health/strangeplanet and use promo code STRANGEPLANET for an exclusive 10% discount. Prepare today and rest easy tomorrow.
Overwhelmed by investing?
If you're anything like us, the hardest part is getting started. That's why we created the Investing for Beginners podcast.
Our goal is to help simplify money so it can work for you.
We invite guests to demystify investing.
At least try to be setting aside like the minimum 10% into the 401k.
We'll teach you the basics of the market.
Yeah, I think compound interest should be at the start of any discussion about investing. And
we've had investment professionals who teach in a simple way.
A valuation-driven bear market. You know, we haven't really seen yet, and I think everyone's thinking about it, but we haven't really seen yet.
Our Q&A episodes feature questions from listeners just like you.
So what do you think about the situation with ETBI, which is Activision?
I'm Dave Ahern.
And I'm Andrew Sather.
And we hope you join us on the Investing for Beginners podcast.
On the Investing for Beginners podcast.
Every town has a dark side. This is Andrew Fitzgerald from the Every Town podcast, where every single week we dive into insane and mysterious true crime stories, most of which you've never heard of. Stories like the bizarre disappearance of Tyler Davis in Columbus, Ohio, a 29-year-old father trying to find his way back to his hotel when he disappeared and was never heard from again, and Elizabeth Shove from Lugoff, South Carolina, who was abducted from her driveway by a madman and taken to his underground bunker in the woods. We give you all the details you're interested in hearing about without any fluff or fillers, because ain't nobody got time for that. We cover everything from psychopaths to poltergeists, so go check out the Every Town podcast, because every town, no matter how nice it may seem, has a dark side.
Richard Serrett's Strange Planet. Following the truth wherever it leads. Exposing evil and corruption and the secret machinations of powerful elites. Revealing the high strangeness beneath the surface of our supposed reality. Coming to you from the Great White North and his studio beneath the stairs. Here's Richard.
Welcome once again to another episode of Strange Planet. Thanks as always for sticking me in your ear. And as always, if you'd like to get deeper into Strange Planet, you might want to think about becoming a premium subscriber. Just go to strangeplanet.supportingcast.fm, strangeplanet.supportingcast.fm. The link is in the episode description, of course. And there are three monthly tiers to choose from. So we are going to attempt to demystify artificial intelligence. I've done a number of programs recently on artificial intelligence, and I'm a bit of a Luddite. I have 2 feet firmly planted in the analog world. And so I find AI, quite frankly, particularly, you know, the latest iteration of ChatGPT, a little intimidating, I'm rattled by it. quite frankly? What does it mean for content producers? We used to talk about, you know, oh, here comes the robot apocalypse and the robot revolution, and any job that can be replaced by a robot will be. But it's accelerating at an alarming rate, and now it's the content producers, really, that could be replaced by, not robots necessarily, but artificial intelligence. And we're going to talk about that right now with David Edward, who has just developed an AI that writes movie scripts. That's right, you heard me correctly. This AI can write one new movie script, wait for it, every 5 minutes. Absolutely incredible. David Edward served as a special agent in the U.S. Army in the 1980s and 90s, is a veteran of multiple overseas combat tours. He was the special agent in charge of the 1990 Panama Canal Counterterrorism Threat Assessment Report to the U.S. Congress. He's a graduate of the United States Army Intel School, where he studied advanced human intelligence and battlefield counterintelligence, also completing training at the Jungle Operations Training Center in Panama, Central America. He holds advanced degrees in, well, everything, engineering, including a doctorate in engineering, 3 related Master of Science degrees, and has undergraduate degrees in business. He is the author of a whole series of books, including Atlanta Solved, The Final Definitive Proof, Coral Castle, Maya. These are the short history of series I mentioned. Coral Castle, Maya, DMT, Fingerprints of the Atlanteans. And a great pleasure to have David Edward back on the program. His brand new book is Dave Decodes AI, Artificial Intelligence. Dave, welcome. How are you?
Richard, I'm doing very well. Thank you for having me.
So should I be frightened by artificial intelligence, or is this just another useful tool?
Well, there's a lot to unravel. So I've spent the past just 3 months just hip deep in this. So I understand it pretty well. And it is artificial intelligence, but it's not artificial awareness, which is one of the distinctions. So it's not like the movies where it becomes self-aware and all of those types of things. At first, I was a little dismissive of it when I got into it and I understood what it was doing, but it's not fair to be dismissive. It is a transformative technology, on the same level as the personal computer or the internet or the iPhone or the iPad, or any number of those types of things. So definitely will change our lives, but it's not going to take over. I can explain the different models and stuff for content creators. And I'm a book writer. So, you know, you mentioned the scripts. I did too. The first thing I did was, like everyone else, is, oh Lord, can AI write better books than me? And so you go to it and you say, write a book, and it'll write about 1,000 or 2,000 pages. And then it gets confused and then it stops. And the beginning is always, you know, really tight and then just kind of fragments. So what I did, I had the 2 websites, which are just fun. They're free. I sent you one of them. I got one called AI Script Lab and one called AI Book Lab. And in both of them, what I have is I have 2 different AI models talking to each other to generate the book, because you can't just have one do it. So I have one model, which is, it's an older model. It's called DaVinci. And I say things to DaVinci like, what's a good story? You know, what's a good theme? What's a good character? That kind of stuff. And then I take that and I hand it to the newest model, the GPT-4 model. And I say, develop this character. Look at this outline. Write chapter 1. Here's the chapter 1 you wrote. Now write chapter 2. You know, and you got to kind of handhold it. And I automated it all. Using Python, which is the language they want you to use. I don't really like Python, but it's language you use. So what I do is I brokered that conversation between 2 AIs, and then by the end of it, we have a book or a script. And most of them are junk. So I wouldn't, if you're a content producer, I wouldn't worry about it. I even wrote a little thing where I hand it over to
Wait a second. Most of what comes out of Hollywood is junk. So, I mean, that's not going to be a determining factor necessarily.
Well, that's a fair point, which is, if you lower the bar as far as you can lower it for what humans produce, then yeah, the AI doesn't have anywhere near as far to go to produce the same garbage. And it can produce garbage. I just want to give you, it's like 4 sentences. Here's one of the stories it wrote that I read, because I can't read one script every 5 minutes. Like, I have it pumping out right now. There's thousands of scripts up there. But this one was pretty interesting. It's called The Unfortunate Adventures of John and Jerry. And what happens is, these 2 guys, and it feels like they're in their 20s. It's not clear. They're driving from Las Angeles to Las Vegas. And about halfway there, they run out of gas. Something happens at a gas station and they lose their car and their GPS and their phone. So for some reason, they decided to wander out into the desert. It's not real clear why. When they go out into the desert, they find a crashed alien spaceship. So they talk to the aliens. Everyone's very friendly. They help them fix the spaceship because one of the guys is like knows how to fix cars or something. So in exchange, the aliens give him a potted cactus as a thanks. Okay. So the guy Jerry falls in love with the potted cactus. They get back to the gas station, fix their car, and go to Las Vegas. But he's so in love with the potted cactus that he makes John go around with them, and they free all of the potted cactuses that are on Las Vegas Boulevard. The aliens see that, and they're so impressed with what they're doing, they take them to outer space so they can go free all the potted cactuses across the universe, which they do. Then they get back home, John, who's not been that into it, and Jerry, who has been, Jerry realizes, well, you know what? It's just a plant. The true value of this experience has been friends like John. And that's the end of the story. And it's like,
wow.
Okay. I don't know what to do with it. You know, what does it mean? I don't know.
I guess now we get into how AI works, because using this as an example, I mean, my limited understanding would be that it's cross-referencing. It's basically like mining what all available storylines, whatever it can find online, using your parameters, it cobbles something together, and it ends up being sometimes a bit of a kind of a crazy mishmash.
Well, I'll explain this and guide me if I get too technical or I'm boring you or whatever. Just pull me back in. But the breakthrough we're dealing with came out in a paper called "Attention is All You Need." You can search for that AI. Attention is All You Need. It was a big academic paper. It came out in 2017. It's only 16 pages long, but this is what changed everything. They invented this thing. Invented is the right word. So we have neural networks. I can explain the pieces of AI, but the big piece in the neural network was, if you ask it a question, how do you get it to understand the question and the pieces of it and all that? So this transformer architecture allows, because, you know, the rules for language have been figured out for hundreds, if not thousands of years, right? You know, in today's world, we talk about pronouns and adverbs and conjunctions, you know, all that stuff. I don't even know it all. I write books. I don't know all the rules, but the rules are there. So what they did is they take those rules and they figured out how to tell the AI to figure out what you need to pay attention to in a block of text. And that's a game changer. The neural networks, they're kind of like, do you ever watch The Price is Right? Ever seen Plinko on The Price is Right? I love The Price is Right. Yeah. They're like a giant Plinko board. So a Plinko board has hundreds of little pegs, and you drop the thing in. Each peg is basically a decision, right? It either goes left or it goes right. The AI now can process billions of those decision points in a near instant. And with the attention in the transformer architecture, it can start to figure out what's important, which gets it through all those decision points a lot faster. So, and this is how we think our brains work, right? When you access a memory, you're following pathways to that memory. And the more you think of something or know something or remember something, your brain kind of rewires itself so it goes to those memories quicker, more directly. So, you know, you don't have, if you're trying to think of when you were five, right? You're not flooded with everything that happened to you when you were five, whether it's in your head or not, but you know, the key thing, your parents got divorced or you got a puppy or whatever it is. And that's, and so they fixed that now. And they call these new models, GPT stands for Generative Pre-trained Transformer, right? So the transformer is this new architecture. The pre-training is years. It takes them years to train the thing on available information. And all that training is done against a bias model, which we'll talk about, because that word bias has a couple meanings, some of them negative. And then generative, and this is why I actually got into an argument with the AI, and it'll argue, because I said, you're not really generative. It's more like selective compression. And it was like, no, not at all. I make stuff up. I'm like, you don't really make stuff up, because kind of what you said, it has access to all the information that exists for free on the internet, which is a lot. And some, they say they bought some libraries. I don't have a clue what that means. But it can go through all of that and it finds patterns in the way we talk to each other and the way we explain things and all of that. And it can overlay those patterns to what it's discovered is important and then return something that we as a human that looks intelligent to us. And now there's two ways it can do this. The GPT, like GPT-4, which is the model that's out there now, it's a general model. So it knows lots of stuff, but it's not a domain expert in anything. Then they have an older model called ADA, which is let me get the name right. It's a automatic domain adoption, and you can embed this into the GPT-3 model. And what that is, it means it's smart enough where you can say you're a scientist, you're working on extracting DNA to forecast diseases in humans. And then it can kind of tool its network so that it's going to look at the world through that domain. And this is, I always joke in business, I'll say, look, if you ask an accountant a question, you're going to get an accounting answer. And I find this, you know, typically people will go ask, you know, they'll go ask a programmer how to do something and you get a programming answer back. It's like, yeah, we could program that, but maybe, you know, we don't need to. But so what you can do and what we're doing in some of our stuff is you can say, okay, you're a domain expert for this. And now look at the world that way. And when you start to combine it that way, you can get interesting answers. And the big area, I'm a little all over the place, but the big area that they seem to be developing is writing, because that seems easy, right? So they have these ADA models that are becoming experts in creative writing, professional writing, all that kind of stuff. I don't think it will ever replace a person because it's not self-aware, but it is intelligent and it's truly artificial intelligence. But it takes a person to look at it to see if it makes any sense. It doesn't know whether it makes sense or not. And that's still the gap that we're dealing with.
Okay, so all of this talk about the singularity and Elon Musk waving red flags saying we need to get regulations now, otherwise AI is going to destroy us. That's a lot of hooey.
He's right. No, he's right. Because people are idiots. It's not the AI that's going to destroy us. It's the people that decide what we're going to do with it. We're going to eventually get there. So we're dealing with a lot of bias right now. He's absolutely right. But we actually, it's not an impending disaster, but it's going to be if we don't get in front of it. So now is the time to regulate it. Here's the problem we're dealing with AI. And I'll try and keep this as politically free as I can, but it's a political problem, which is the data that all AI that we're interacting with, not all, I can explain the differences, but the publicly available AI is all trained on data that was available through September of 2021. Well, when it's looking about how humans interact, what our opinions of things are, because you start to get you can have data bias. So let's think back to September of 2021. There was only certain conversations that you were allowed to have, and there were only certain answers to those conversations.
AI is woke.
AI doesn't have to be woke, but given what it can see of us, it is woke. And then what you get is something called bias amplification, which is what we're dealing with. Where and I tried this with it, you know, we talked about Atlantis. So I would ask, where is Atlantis? And it everything is very biased towards Atlantis is a myth, we don't know. And you can't shake that because the information it has as of September 2021 supports that. And when you get into politics or people let's just pretend that in September 2021 and for the years leading up to that, in all the chats, forums, all the interactions that we could see, people decided that the color orange was bad, just randomly, just making right. that up. Let's just say.
Bad orange, man. We get it.
Well, I wasn't even going to go there. I was just going to stick with the color. Just stick with the color.
Yeah, okay.
But AI doesn't know. So it goes out and looks. And what can it see? It can see an overwhelming majority of the information it has access to, people saying that the color orange is bad. And anyone who has something counter just gets destroyed and doesn't offer much of a response. It doesn't know that they can't because it's all being pulled off. It doesn't have it. So now if you go ask it a question about one political party versus another, it very much has a biased opinion. And that is just the doom of the timing of when that paper, All Attention Is All You Need, came out, when this breakthrough happened and the data that they had available. The other thing to take note of is I don't know. I have nothing to do with OpenAI. I have no clue what they do. But if you think about that, that data set is now almost 2 years old. So to prep the AI to be able to interact clearly takes years of processing. And they have training algorithms, and I can explain some of that. It's very tedious. because at a micro level, you have to say stuff like, okay, when you get this question, this is the type of answer that, we're expecting contextually, and then this is the type of answer we're, expecting from a format standpoint. So it's going we need the next generation of training. And even if it happened today, I don't know that we're far enough out of that for it to get really good information.
Well, I don't know. Yeah. I think you're looking at, you know, the United Nations wanting to clamp down on internet content in terms of, you know, whatever they consider hate speech to be, for example, or whatever is offensive. We have here in Canada, they're passing laws to allow the government to regulate the internet, social media, and so forth. So I see it only that trend just intensifying.
And that's the problem. So AI in and of itself isn't woke, but if we can't get it both sides of a story, it's gonna be woke. And then what happens is it becomes a what they call it. It's a recursive validation. So in fact, let me give you another example with AI. Because, you know, I play with it. I said, has it ever snowed in Miami, Florida? And it said, yes. It gave me a very authoritative response. It said, yes. On January 14th, 1977, a storm front came through with snow. It snowed for about 3 hours. It didn't stick, blah, 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 blah. And I was, and, you know, with dates and everything, I was like, wow. And then I said, Miami, Florida? Even though I told it that. And it said, oh, no. It has never snowed in Miami, Florida. You're right. I was completely wrong. And I said, well, then why did you tell me it had? And he said, well, it's an AI model. I don't know. You know, they call it hallucinations. And then it you know, just argued against the fact that it had ever done it. But if I hadn't done anything other than ask it once, like if I was writing a paper, let's say, I just said, what I use it for when I'm writing a book, I just wrote a book that takes place in the 70s in Miami. So I was like, oh, maybe it's not, you know, maybe that'd be a cool thing for books. I like to be real. And if I just ask it and use the answer, I would now be saying, like, with great authority, absolutely it did, 1977, January 14th, you know, all that stuff. And so that bias now starts to get recursively enforced, and it rolls forward as truth. And that's a huge problem. Which now the AI, the other thing I do is that, because a lot of times I'll have it check itself. So I'll get an answer from it, and then I'll have in my little algorithms, I'll say, now hand the answer back to the same AI and ask it to validate it. And it'll come back and say, this is baloney, or this is right on, you know, stuff like that. But even that, I have to check. And it'll lie to you. It has fun lying to you. It'll hallucinate. It'll make stuff up. It's you know, I wouldn't want to do an open heart surgery on me, you know, that kind of stuff.
Well, why does it do that? Is that just a glitch, or the people that created ChatGPT, is that, you know, when you talk about hallucinations, I don't understand how does that work?
Well, so this will get ironed out eventually. But if you go back to that Plinko board analogy, yeah, even if we tell it every peg you hit, go left, go right, go left, you're right, there's still, they call it, it's fuzzy. So let me, there's five pieces to an AI system. And this is the machine learning piece, which builds off of something called fuzzy logic, which has been around forever. But, you know, and so, you know, 999 times out of 1,000, it'll go left, but that one time it'll go right. And if it goes right on, you know, one of 100,000 decision points, it might wind up in a funny place or a place it hasn't been before. And I've had it come back, you know, I've asked it questions like, you know, what's a hurricane? And it'll come back and tell me about COVID vaccines. So, but that's just because his brain's not wired yet. Now, that's the OpenAI ChatGPT stuff. There's also these ADA models and other smaller models that just bring the decision-making framework and the ability to understand and analyze data, but aren't pre-trained on all the social internet stuff. And that's where, like, you look, I just read some pharmaceutical company said it used AI to analyze, I don't know, human something, and came up with a new drug, or, you know, whatever. And it's like, well, you're not going to the ChatGPT for chat and having it do that. What you do is you can actually take one of these smaller models where you're dealing with a whole lot less information. You know, everything we know about DNA is a lot less than everything we know about everything, for example.
Right.
And you can tell, okay, you're a domain expert. Here's what you are. Look at this. And then you can ask it questions. That's the other thing. All these AI models, another big breakthrough, is they understand it's a question. They understand what a question is, and it'll come back just like with the cactus thing. You know, that's a generic model, but for the specific models, it'll come back and it might identify patterns or see things that a person wouldn't, or that it would take in years and years for a person to find. So that's where you're seeing these industrial applications, and anyone can do this. If you search for open source AI self-hosted or something like that, there's models that you can download and run on your computer. And they're not going to solve the world, but you can say things like, look at my resume. Here's my resume. Look at this job posting, and hand it the job posting and say, write a letter, write a nice cover letter that aligns my resume to the job.
Wow.
Cool. Yeah. What I'm using it for now, like in my books and any book that's that is nonfiction, is I write something out. And it used to be, you know, you'd write 10 pages and then you have to spend the day going and making sure you get all the footnotes and, you know, all that stuff. Now I just hand it the text. I say, put the footnotes in, and you have to tell it only use real books, because I had that problem. And then I tell it, create an annotated bibliography of the books you use to make sure, you know, they're really real. And it does it in like 30 seconds. And that's a day's worth of work that I now don't have to do. So it's going to help content. I think it's going to be a tremendous benefit to content creators. In my most recent book, Noah Kane, which is a great book, by the way, I had to come up with like the guy's name for his boat, the name for Marina in Miami, just, you know, and, you know, so instead of having to think for 5 minutes and make sure I don't pick something that's real, because, you know, God forbid I should have a character that's actually a real person and I portray him in a negative light, I asked the AI, I said, you know, give me 10 examples that are kind of funny that a guy might name his boat in 1970s in the Everglades. And it did. I landed on, what was it? It gave me, it was Gator Baiter. I was like, yeah, that's hilarious. Okay. So now the guy's boat's named the Gator Baiter in my story. So that kind of stuff, it's incredibly valuable for, because it can get to answers that we would get to, but a lot quicker.
David Edward is with us. Dave Decodes AI, available at Amazon. Back with more of our conversation right after these.
I'm Andrew Gold, a fallen BBC journalist interviewing the heretics and rebels brave enough to speak out against mainstream narratives. Here's Coleman Hughes, John Ronson, and the Trigonometry podcast guys bringing controversy to the fore.
How'd you feel if a person of a different race moved in next door?
I spent a while with a politically correct faction of the Ku Klux Klan.
The system punishes people for wrongthink. It's heartbreaking.
Here's My Unorthodox Life Netflix star Julia Hart on getting out of a Hasidic Jewish cult.
Why can't I be okay with being silent and subservient? Everyone else is.
And biologist Richard Dawkins on trans activism.
It's perfectly legitimate to say, I'm a man, but I feel feminine. But to then say, therefore I am a woman, is just a betrayal of language.
Now it's your turn. Rebel against the mainstream and find a home in this sensible alternative space by subscribing to Heretics Podcast.
We all enjoy a little mystery. Every other week, One Strange Thing presents forgotten stories from America's newspaper archives. They all have something in common, a single element that can't quite be explained. Join us on One Strange Thing, and you'll hear about a man who was literally stricken with genius. A 21st century child who remembered piloting a World War II bomber. A mysterious, unidentifiable blob in Texas. And then there was the lizard man stalking through small-town South Carolina. From cryptids and disappearances to modern-day miracles, One Strange Thing brings you stories that are very real. And just a little otherworldly. Subscribe now, wherever you listen.
Have you ever wondered why we call French fries French fries? Or why something is the greatest thing since sliced bread? There are answers to those questions. Everything Everywhere Daily is a podcast for curious people who want to learn more about the world around them. Every day, you'll learn something new about things you never knew you didn't know. Subjects include history, science, geography, mathematics, and culture. If you're a curious person and want to learn more about the world you live in, just subscribe to Everything Everywhere Daily wherever you cast your pod.
Yeah.
It's time to redefine reality. This is Richard Serrett's Strange Planet.
We're back with David Edward. David, I want to just get back to the AIscriptlab.com for a minute. And you've just created this this website. AI is pumping out, one new movie script every 5 minutes, and then you're adding it to the AI Script Lab database. And you've got all of these different genres: mythology, philosophy, mystery, legend, horror, historical fiction. So what else does it do? I mean, it puts it in a proper, you know, Hollywood script format. I think you said it provides a budget.
Yeah. So I had some fun. So I wanted to see how far it could go. And by the way, all of those categories, everything up there is AI generated. There's no, all I did, I mean, I started with a question, which is what's a good idea for a story? That's it. And then everything else, it hands back the genre. Then I'm like, well, okay, well, what else can it do? Because it writes the movie script. And part of the problem I had was the movie scripts I was getting back initially were like 500 pages. And I'm like, no, that's a television series, not a movie. So I had to tell it, I had to explain that it was about a page a minute to it and all that kind of stuff. But then I have it budget it. So it goes in based upon the script and it pulls out, you know, is there special effects? Or it puts the budget together. It does a market analysis. So based upon the genre and where it's going to be released and the budget and the story, because I handed the story and all that stuff, it comes in and it says, okay, well, you know, you can expect a low, mid, high box office of this amount. It puts an executive summary or pitch together. It budgets out a schedule and it assigns all the various people, the director, the actors, all that stuff. And it puts a list together of what shooting locations they need. And you can say, I tell it, organize the shooting locations for the least number of, you know, breakdowns and setups. So the least number of location changes. But you could tell it, organize the schedule to minimize the actor's time or to, I don't know, whatever. You can pick anything. So I do all that and it hands it all back. And this is all on the website. You can see it. And sometimes it's ridiculous, but sometimes it's pretty good. And it'll even come back and it'll say like, well, you know, this movie has $100 million budget, but the best chances it's not going to make more than $80 million. So it's like, okay, well, that's not a good, you know, so no. So it's saying no to it.
Does it do casting and camera blocking?
Yeah, no, in the script, I tell it. I said, give me every camera move. Give me all the notes, which I know a lot of actors and people don't like. But I said, give me the notes. Give me everything. And it does. Sometimes more successful than others. But it gives me the blockings. It gives everything. You know, everything, locations, breakdowns. I didn't have it. Like, I could tell it, okay, figure the wardrobe out. You could delve into the departments and do all of that. I wouldn't put my money on one of these things, but like the cactus thing, but a person could use this to create the movie scripts a lot faster. And as long as a person is still using their creative eye, then it's a game changer for the industry.
A game changer, right? Because we're in the midst of this big writer's strike in Hollywood and New York. Thousands and thousands of writers out on strike, and it could drag on. I think you mentioned, you know, till the fall or Christmas or beyond.
Yeah, that's my understanding. This
is a game changer for that business. What does that mean, though, in terms of a Hollywood scriptwriter?
Well, they make it. See, so it's the classic, in my opinion. Holding on to the past as opposed to embracing the future. We all deal with this all of the time. As a computer programmer, I have to deal with all the changes and stuff that happens to the internet. If you look at the things they're asking for, you know, they want a minimum of X number of writers on a project and a minimum of X number of weeks to work and all that. What they should be doing, in my opinion, would be to instead structuring this around, yeah, you're going to have fewer writers, but if you allow them to use AI, maybe instead of having more writers on one project, what they should be trying to do is get one writer to be on multiple projects, because they can be so much more productive with the use of AI. Now, again, this isn't, you don't tell AI to write a movie script. That's not what this does, but you can even hand it a scene. I've done this in my books. I haven't used it yet, but it gives me notes. I found if I ask it to rewrite something, it's not a good writer. Well, it doesn't write like I do, and I think I write good. I mean, you know, some people would disagree based on the reviews of my books. Not everyone, because it's very big. But what I have done is I've said, look at this. Here's an action scene, and I'll say stuff like, you know, I'm afraid it's a little too violent, but I want it to be impactful. Do you have any ideas? And then I'll say, give it to me in a bulleted list, and it'll give me 10 ideas, and 7 of them are junk, but 3 of them are like, it's good. That's good. So it makes my story better by using it.
If all of your books were available online, or you just created a library and gave these AIs access to your digitized version of all your books and said, write me a chapter in the style of David Edward, could it do it?
The answer is yes. But it's not as simply as you think. You'd have to. So the OpenAI GPT models that we see, GPT-3.5 Turbo, GPT-4, all that stuff, cannot be trained that way. You'd have to go back to an older model, like the ADA, the GPT-3 ADA model. And if you did that, it's a bit of a technical process because you have to hand it all that stuff, give it time to look at it, and then ask it questions, see what it gets back, and in a training environment, tell it yes, no, yes, no, yes, no, yes, no. However, if you did that, in theory, if we were to ask it what you just said, yeah, using my style, write book 7 of Dirk Lasher, or write the introduction, because he can't write a whole book. I would have to believe that it would be pretty close to what I've done. Although, again, it just like with it wouldn't have the context. We still don't have context. Now, the other thing you can do, and this is some of the stuff we're working on, is you can hand these models back the context because it doesn't have it. So you have training, that's thing one, and then you have context, that's thing two. So when you're having a conversation with it, when you ask it the next question, what's going on behind the scenes is it's handing to the AI model the conversation you've had so far. And then your next question, so they can stay in context stay in content. The model that's available to the public through ChatGPT 3.5 that I have access to, I think you can hand it back up to 16,000, they call them tokens, which is a complicated structure. But the easiest way to think about it is it's 16,000 tokens would probably be about 8,000 or 10,000 words, let's say. So that's a lot of words. You can build a lot of context, but it's not everything. So you can't talk to it for 3 hours and it will have no clue what you talked about 2 hours ago. So it still struggles with context because the amount of information you can give it is still very, very small. Now in the GPT-4 model, they've upped that 16K limit to like 32K. So we're going through those generational bounds that we went through, like with the personal computer. I remember my first personal computer, I think it had 256K of RAM, which I thought was an infinite supply, and it had like a 8 meg hard drive, which I thought was the biggest thing ever. So we've probably got to get 3 or 4 more generations into it before it's easy to do these types of things where you can say, write in my style, learn this, let's talk for 3 days about something, right? Let's really get into Plato for real and diagnose it, because you can't do that in a chat conversation. Which is why the chatbots have become kind of the first implementation that we see, because those are very small conversations. So it's easy to train it on your products and services and the tone and all that stuff, and then have a chat conversation for 10 minutes or 5 minutes and be in context the whole time.
Can we apply Moore's Law to AI and trying to predict where we'll be in another 6 months and in 3 years?
There will be a law like that because it's going to be so accelerated. What is that? Moore's Law is it doubles every 2 years. Something like that. I used to know it. I used to be the one up standing in front of people saying it all the time. It's going to be something like that. There's going to be at some point it will get big enough to where we don't have to wait for the next generation, but we got to get off of 16K, 32K. We need to be able to hand this thing megs and megs and megs. So yeah, I think it's knowable. I don't know it, but I think the time between ChatGPT 3 and 4 was maybe 18 months or something like that. And I'll bet that we see that accelerate. So we have a new generation of this thing, at least when it comes to the, doubling the amount of information you can hand it in context, probably every couple months coming up. It's gonna take off. which is why now is the time. Now is the time to figure all this out, figure the bias stuff out. I usually am an anti-regulatory person, huge. However, I think regulating nuclear energy is fine, and I think regulating AI is fine, because the danger is people are lazy and they're going to hand stuff off to this thing, not understanding that, you know, 0.0001% of the time it's going to do something goofy. And, you know, I wouldn't want AI to drive my car. I mean, we're not there yet. So we've got to guard against being stupid too early. And then we've got to solve the bias problem, which I don't even know how we solve it, because it doesn't have access to the information. Because we've kept one side of the conversation away from the world, we've also kept it away from AI. And this is when AI is going to learn who it is. So, yeah, I don't know.
But yeah, much like our public school system, really.
Yeah, right. I've actually been thinking of starting a new public school system. I'm serious. I was president of a university for a while, so I know the inside of that disgusting, convoluted, inbred world. And none of it's real. You know, accreditation and all that stuff drives more bias than anyone can ever imagine. So I think there's a market for it. I just haven't got the energy to do it. I mean, you know, I took my Lannis YouTube channel down because, you know, 8 people got mad at me. So I don't know if I have it in me, but someone should. I mean, we need real education. Yeah. You know, it I don't want to soapbox. I know
it's called baited homeschooling. Me with that. Yeah. So, it's called homeschooling, David. All
right. Well, it is the challenge with homeschooling is that I do believe there's a social component to being young, homeschooling struggles with a little bit. So the education side is great, but I think part of it is, you know, sitting in a class and answering a question. We don't really know the answer in front of everyone. Learning those emotions and how to do all that involves more than just homeschool. But who am I? I don't know. You know, I don't have any strong feelings about it.
All right. We'll take another time out. Back to artificial intelligence when we come back.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to be buried in an avalanche?
Weird foreign feeling of despair.
Or how it feels to crash a skydive?
I remember hearing a thud, feeling my body hit the ground.
Or how you would react if you were being attacked by an alligator?
At the end of my leg is this huge alligator head on my leg.
These are the stories you'll hear on the podcast called What Was That Like? True stories told by the actual person who went through it. You'll hear from a victim of an attack.
Dragging me into the bathroom and saying, I'm going to kill you. Now you're going to die.
You'll hear from a man who discovered a baby.
How could this be? How could there be a baby on the ground?
And you'll hear actual 911 calls.
Clinky County 911. There's a man at my back door. He's trying to get in.
What Was That Like is a podcast about real people in unreal situations. Search for What Was That Like on any podcast app or at whatwasthatlike.com.
Do you want to know what it's like to hang out with MS-13 in El Salvador? How the Russian mafia fought battles all over Brooklyn in the 1990s.
Or what about that time I got lost in the Burmese jungle hunting the world's biggest meth lab? Or why the Japanese Yakuza have all those crazy dragon tattoos? I'm Sean Williams.
And I'm Danny Gold. And we're the hosts of the Underworld Podcast. We're journalists that have traveled all over, reporting on dangerous people and places. And every week, we'll be bringing you a new story about organized crime from all over the world.
We know this stuff because we've been there. We've seen it, and we've got the near misses and embarrassing tales to go with it. We'll mix in reporting with our own experiences in the field, and we'll throw in some bad jokes while we're at it.
The Underworld Podcast explores the criminal underworlds that affect all of our lives, whether we know it or not. Available wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Richard Serrett's Strange Planet. Follow Richard on Twitter at Richard Serrett. For show information, visit the website strangeplanet.ca.
Dave decodes AI, artificial intelligence, available at Amazon. And he takes readers on an enlightening journey through the captivating realm of artificial intelligence and demystifying the complexity of AI, making it accessible to readers of all backgrounds. I just recently had a conversation with Vernon Reed, who is, I think Rolling Stone magazine listed him as the 60th or 66th greatest rock guitarist of all time. He founded the band Living Color, which was not really my era. It's the, you know, sort of the early 80s when I was into, you know, Dylan, the Dead, and the Doors. Anyway, I'm very well-versed as well on AI in terms of its impact on the music industry. And I think he's sort of aligned with you in thinking that it's, you know, it has great potential. Yes, it needs to be regulated, but, you know, we need to come in off the ledge. You know, people like me who are kind of nervous about it. But when you have, for example, AI producing producing new music from someone who's was part of the 27 Club, has been dead and gone for 50 years, like Jimi Hendrix. All of a sudden, we have new Jimi Hendrix music coming out. It sounds like Jimi Hendrix. It plays in the style of Jimi Hendrix. There's no legal framework really for that. You know, what about the estate of Jimi Hendrix? You know, what are your, do you have any thoughts on that?
I do, and it's interesting you bring music up, because I tried everything with it, and it can't create. You know, so in music, there's this thing called MIDI. I forget what it stands for, but it's like the standard. You know, if you have a keyboard, you plug it in, it probably has a MIDI plug, and then it's like it electronically moves the music around and stuff. So I'm like, okay, AI. You know, can you create a MIDI file? No. Okay. Can you create a song? So I basically, if you handed a chord progression and stuff, and you can say, you know, create a song. And the truth is, I hadn't thought about, because I didn't spend a lot of time on it, but the music it creates does, because in a book, you have to have a connection with a human, and the story has to make sense and all that. With music, it just has to sound good, and chords and chord progressions and all that is, there's a pattern to it. And I had it create some songs, and it sounds pretty good. So I don't know what the implications are for the music side. But the challenge is, they claim GPT. I remember I said GPT was generative. And that's not what it's doing. It's compressing. So you're right. Because it's done behind the scenes through an AI, there's a copyright component, like to Jimi Hendrix, or, you know, you mentioned, I was ZZ Top and Aerosmith. I mean, those were my 80s. Mm-hmm. And yeah, the AI could absolutely, because it's just patterns. And when you reduce the music down to data, it can go look at those patterns and then pick different chords and different rhythms and stuff and kind of regeneratively create it. And it sounds like the other stuff. And you've lost that copyright component. I don't even know how you prove it. It's a huge problem. I don't know what the answer is, by the way. I've even had the AI, I've been testing it, and I've said, take this text. Can you, you know, explain to me, are there patterns in the text that leave fingerprints that it was written by an AI or a person? And the GPT models always come back and say, no, there's no way to know. This is amazing text. But some of these other ADA models that I run, not connected to anything with my own training, there are patterns that it can pick up on. So I would assume the same thing is true with music. Someone really smart is going to have to figure this out, and it's going to take a while. But there's probably fingerprints you could trace back. But the problem is then you get false positives too. So you could have someone write a completely original song, you know, that has been, they've been a ZZ Top cover band for 10 years. Now they're doing their own stuff. Of course, it's got those influences. The AA might say, yeah, it's just like this other stuff. So how do you know? I don't know. It's our creative foundation legally is blown up with this. It's completely blown up. And authorship and all those things have to be redefined. And I don't know what that is, but it has to happen or we're going to lose it all. And if we lose it all, then it just becomes this recursive regurgitation of what's already been said, which is a nightmare, absolute nightmare.
Yeah, it may give rise to a whole new, industry, a new field of legal practice.
Well, I think it will. The ironic part is it's going to have to be fueled by AI. The only way to figure AI out is with another AI. Now, again, I'm trying to make this point. It's not all Skynet. It's not all one Skynet. We can pull these things apart. We can isolate them. We can train. In fact, one thing I'm working on is I'm training it how to be an auditor, right? How to go in very specifically. They have this idea of what they call heat. So you can tell, be creative, don't be creative. Obviously, for an auditor, I don't want you to be creative at all. But so we can start to build regulatory AI to monitor the non-regulatory AI. But it's a Golden Escher Bach disaster right now. We're so far into the recursion, we're trusting machines to tell us what the other machines are doing. It's going to have to be that way. But a lot of smart people are going to have to figure a lot of stuff out. And if we don't do it quickly, then just turn your computer off, right? Because it's just going to all be the same message everywhere.
Yeah, I just find it bizarre. You know, now we have computers asking humans with this CAPTCHA to prove we're not a computer.
Oh, you know, you talk about rants. I get so mad. We don't own it. You know, humans, I don't know. I don't have any accounts. All of my accounts belong to my phone. So if I try and log into something now, it says, well, let me check if your phone says it's okay that you get in. Because I'm like, what? I stop carrying my phone. It's hard. Most people can't do it. I'm very lucky the way I've set my life up. But I don't carry a phone. I can't, because I don't want to live that way. I don't want to constantly be worried about the phone. And there's lots of things that say, well, we have to have two-step verification. You got to have a phone. So I'm like, no, it's not going to be part of my life. I mean, I can't do that 100% because I got to earn and make money. But
right.
I think we got to unplug ourselves from this and let it. I don't know. You know, it can't be that my phone is in charge of me.
What has you excited about AI? Let's the upside. Let's say, for example, in the medical field, do you see, what is the upside for AI in the medical
field? Well, there's huge. So look, there is huge upside to this. So take out the social, right? Social, everything is its own different world. But you know, in medical field, there's breakthroughs. Let me tell you what I'm doing. What we're doing with it. I mean, I earn my money in we do North American trucking compliance. So we have all these regulations, and the things these companies got to do, truck drivers and shipping companies and supply chain logistics. So a lot of it is they have to have like a billion documents. One of the things they have to have is called a driver qualification file. So for every guy you see driving a semi truck out there, there's like 25 documents and drug tests and all these things they have to have. And it's complicated. And if they're hauling hazardous material or cows, it's different, all this stuff. So what we're doing, and I have a working prototype of this, is we're saying, you're an auditor. Here's all the regulations, and there's thousands and thousands of pages of it, but we've trained it on it. Now look at this set of documents, look at this driver, look at this situation, and audit it. And don't be creative, but hand me back the audit. And it does it. A person still has to look at it, because it will hallucinate, you know, one time out of 100, one time out of 1,000. But it does it. It does a better job. Like, one of the things we have to do is when a driver buys gas, fuel for their truck, they have to report where they bought the fuel, and they have to report all the miles they drove in all the different states. And one of the checks, and the government wrote a system to that, one of the checks we have to do is, are all of the states listed contiguous? Meaning, you know, if they bought fuel in Florida and then they drove to Georgia and then they drove to Arizona, Georgia, right? Yeah. Well, I was like, how am I going to solve this? So then I just went to AI. I said, are these states contiguous? And it comes back, yes or no. You know what I mean? It's like, and so it saved me a week of programming, probably, wow, 3 days, 4 days of programming, you know, that kind of stuff. So I think when you can get it out of being creative, but allow it to understand questions and do the data analysis, I think it opens all kinds of doors, like you said, for healthcare and science and all that stuff. It's because it's good. And it can summarize and present the data back to a person, and we can verify it in almost instantly, but it sees things we don't see, and it does it a lot faster than we can do it.
Any concerns about artificial intelligence directing robots?
Well, you know, that comes back to if someone's going to do it, they probably already. Oh, do you watch? You ever seen? There's a show on Discovery called BattleBots. You ever watch BattleBots?
Yes.
I love it. I watch it every year, and they've got someone with a joystick controller, right? I would bet you in the next 3 years we're going to see someone with an AI model in there in the BattleBot, and there's some type of agreement where it says, you know, if you think something's the right thing to do, do it. You know, lower your weapon, move left, move right. But if you don't have an idea, then follow my instructions. And yeah, I think it's all coming. It's going to be a disaster because we can't get it right. And because of the fuzzy nature of the transformer architecture, if it decides what it's paying attention to is the wrong thing, it's going to make the absolute right decision. But in the real world, you know, it's going to be wrong. And I don't know how we get through that stuff. I mean, like, I wouldn't want RoboCop running around with an Da Vinci AI in its head trying to decide who to shoot, because it can't, because it's still, because remember, it's not aware. It's very smart. It's It's smarter than us when it comes to detailed works with big data sets, but it has no concept of awareness and has no concept of whether what it's done is right or not. It only knows whether what it's done is what it's been trained to do or not. So we're going to have to work through all this stuff.
Dave Decodes AI, artificial intelligence, available at Amazon and where else? Where else can we get it?
I only put my stuff on Amazon. It's like 89% of the market.
Dave.
Long live Amazon. Oh, sorry.
Fascinating conversation. Thank you so much for sort of talking me in off the ledge. I appreciate it.
Yeah, of course. Well, yeah, no, you stay on the ledge, but have another cigarette before you jump. That's my advice.
A new Richard Serrett's Strange Planet drops every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday.